Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, April 21st, 2017. South Sudan's finance minister says the economy of his country is improving.
The economic situation is still facing some challenges, but we have reduced inflation from over 500 to 370%.
And the South Sudanese government is no longer supplying urgently needed medicines to Juba Teaching Hospital.
We are lacking medicine like antibiotics. We don't have medicines for hypertension and their diabetic cases. Actually, normally they find a lot of problems. WHO used to supply, and then UNICEF used to supply medicine for psychiatric cases. But nowadays, actually, we are facing a lot of problems.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's Minister of Finance, Stephen Diu Dao, says despite the economic crisis in South Sudan, the country has managed to lower its inflation rate. He says his ministry is working very hard to diversify the economy of the country to avoid what he calls a total collapse of the economy. Diu is leading the South Sudan delegation to this week at the annual World Bank International Monetary Fund Spring Meetings, which focuses on the global economy and international development. Ayen Bior interviewed Diu about the economic challenges facing South Sudan.
After the positive assessment of the consultation under Article 4 on South Sudan economic policies, we met with the management in the fund and in the bank, and we reiterated our positions to cooperate with the International Monetary Fund for the reform agenda in South Sudan. South Sudan currently is implementing peace. The president has declared the national dialogue as an inclusive forum. So we have met and mobilizing our donors to support South Sudan in pursuit in implementing the peace agreement and in also in the reform process.
Could you describe to me South Sudan's relationship with the IMF and the World Bank? I understand that the IMF had to pull out of the country after fighting broke out in July. So could you just tell us what the relationship is like right now between the IMF and South Sudan as well as the World Bank in South Sudan?
We are implementing the policies that were recommended by the fund mission to the Republic of South Sudan. We are enjoying the support and technical support from the IMF, and we are also getting a support from the World Bank. So the relations between the Republic of South Sudan and with both the fund and the World Bank are very good, and we are looking forward to deepen for the long-term engagement with the International Monetary Fund and with the World Bank.
What exactly is their message to you? Because, you know, obviously the economic situation in South Sudan is dire right now. So what are the IMF and World Bank officials telling you?
There are two messages. One, they are encouraging us to continue in the reform agenda. Number two is that South Sudan to continue implementing peace and to bring back the peace to the country. We assured the IMF leadership and the World Bank that the government of South Sudan is committed in implementing peace agreement and also conducting inclusive national dialogue.
Could you describe the economic conditions in South Sudan right now? I mean, people are saying that it's collapsing. How would you describe it?
The economic situation is still facing some challenges, but we have contained some economic indications. We have reduced inflation from over 500 to 370%. But there are still some areas we have not done much. We are hoping that we'll improve in these areas in the next few months.
What areas?
The exchange rate is still remaining one of the challenging areas. And then the improvement in public financial management and also the strengthening of domestic revenue mobilizations.
That was South Sudan's finance minister, Stephen Diu Dao, speaking to Ayen Bior from the sidelines of the World Bank IMF spring meeting going on here in Washington. While the finance minister says things are generally improving in Juba, hospitals across South Sudan lack basic medicine and vital surgical equipment. A senior pharmacist at Juba Teaching Hospital says the hospital has run out of essential drugs for more than 1,000 patients who visit the hospital each day. Nabil Biagio has more for VOA from Juba.
Dr. Nathaniel Moga Yona is director of the pharmacy at the government-owned Juba Teaching Hospital. He says, in recent months, drug supplies have not been arriving, severely affecting health services at the oldest and biggest hospital in South Sudan.
We had a system called push system in the hospital, where you used to get quarterly supply of medicine every 3 months. That system actually stopped a bit. The donors have not put in their support. But presently, we are getting some support from other NGOs, which enables us at least to push on, like ICRC.
Dr. Yona says the hospital is in desperate need of medicines. He says the institution is scrambling to find donors who can provide medicines for patients who have no money to buy drugs available in the market.
We are trying our level best at least to access some medicine from various corners, especially from the NGOs and from the companies which they have drugs which are expiring within 4 to 6 months. So normally, if you contact such companies, they do deliver to us some medicine.
In the past, the Minister of Health supplied drugs to Juba Teaching Hospital and other hospitals across the country. The pharmacist says it is the sole responsibility of the Minister of Health to continue to provide medicines to hospitals.
It is not our effort as the team in the hospital actually to access this medicine, but it is the job of the ministry. I don't have any opinion about why the donors are not coming in time or why have they abruptly actually delayed supplying the hospital with the medicines.
VOA tried contacting Minister of Health officials for comment on this report several times, but each time officials dodged the calls. Dr. Yona says the hospital does not have enough drugs to treat chronic and even life-threatening diseases.
We are lacking things like antibiotics. We don't have medicines for hypertension and there. Diabetic cases, actually, normally they find a lot of problems. WHO used to supply, and then UNICEF used to supply medicine for psychiatric cases. But nowadays, actually, we are facing a lot of problems. We have psychiatric cases, but no medicine.
A local investor in the medical field who does not want to be identified for fear of government retribution calls the situation at Juba Hospital dire. He says health workers at the hospital have no soap for washing their hands after screening patients. And he says the hospital has outdated surgical equipment. Dr. Yona says some health workers are at high risk of contracting diseases because there are not enough surgical gloves to go around at the hospital.
This has been a headache actually to us in the hospital because we have a lot of units. Most of these units are using gloves, but I'm still appealing to companies and NGOs actually to supply us with the surgical and non-surgical gloves. And as you see, if it begins to rain, we shall face a lot of cases of cholera like what we had last year. And without gloves, actually, we will not be able to manage some of these cases.
Dr. Yona also says the price of drugs has shot up in recent months. Most patients who are seen at Juba Teaching Hospital cannot afford to buy prescription drugs in the market and go without the drugs they need to be treated or cured of their ailments. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
Residents of the Yei River State Capital say food insecurity continues to be a major problem for most families who cannot cultivate their lands because of the ongoing fighting between warring parties. According to statistics from the state, nearly 200,000 families in Kajokeji and Yei counties have no food and are barely surviving on fruits. Daniel Friday Martin has the story for VOA from Yei Town.
2 months ago, food security officials in Yei made a desperate appeal to the international humanitarian community to urgently distribute some food aid to some 60,000 families in Yei Town who were at risk of starvation. Hayat Clara, a mother of three, says a bucket of maize sells for 700 South Sudanese pounds in the market. She says at those prices, most families cannot afford to put food on the table for their loved ones.
Our children are really suffering. Currently, we have already lost over three children that fell from mango tree, and all of them were dead. The families are also even surviving on fruits like pawpaws, mangoes, raw cassava. Others even don't eat.
Aligo Morris has six children. He says he is not able to provide food for his family because he does not have the money to buy food from the market. He says armed men, both government forces and the armed opposition, are harassing and even killing civilians who try to cultivate their farms on the outskirts of Yei Town.
It's very difficult even to feed the family. The few things that are brought to the market are very expensive and we cannot even buy it, to an extent where sometimes we sleep hungry, we don't feed. To access food, you find men goes to their gardens and they are arrested. Sometimes they disappear, you will not know where they had gone.
The commissioner of Kajokeji County, Luka Nyombe, says there are over 150,000 internal displaced persons living at an IDP camp in Njale near the border with Uganda. He says most of the families in Njale have no food or medicines due to the recent fighting in the area between the South Sudan Army and the fighters loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar.
People are in need of food, settled down in a displaced camp. However, we are trying to organize them. And then the only problem is the food. And we have been telling them maybe to try to get some cassava from what was left by those who have gone to their camps.
The chairman for the Yei River State Relief and Rehabilitation Commission, Peter Butley, is pleading with humanitarian aid agencies, especially the World Food Program, to come and save families from starving to death.
Food security situation in Yei is getting worse and worse by the day. In fact, last week, we lost a boy of about 11 years old who fell off from the peak of a mango tree because of hunger. The situation in Kajokeji is very, very desperate. And by the way, we don't want to reach a situation where people are dying amiss, and then the international community comes there with the cameras, with word and trying to take pictures of families, children, people dying.
BRAC, an international non-governmental development organization that helps people living in poverty, started an agricultural program in South Sudan to offset widespread food insecurity in the country. The group opened two demonstrative farms in Yambio and Yei for training farmers. But the recent insecurity in Yei River State has forced many farmers to abandon their land and join the many others who are fleeing to Uganda and the Democratic Republic of Congo. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin. In Yei.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at South Sudanese children with no parents.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what does peace mean to you?
Peace, I can describe it in different ways. Peace means absence of instability. There is no war. There is no injustice. When I live in a very conducive place, I have a good shelter. I have freedom to do everything that I think I have to do as a citizen in that particular country.
Peace, well, I think it's when you're at your happiest and you just feel happy, nothing but joy. That's peace to me.
Well, peace is just like everybody should be allowed to stay without harm, harassment, for whatever reason, the economical, political, all these wars, all these religious blackmails, all these people trying to impose their ideology on you, you know.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's more than three-year-long conflict has taken a heavy toll on children. An orphanage in Kajukeji in the former Central Equatorial State, which hosts 200 children, was forced to relocate recently to Uganda due to rampant insecurity. The manager of the orphanage says fleeing the town amid fighting between South Sudan Army and forces loyal to rebel leader Riek Machar was a nightmare. Simon Peter Apiku has this report for VOA from Adjumani district in northern Uganda.
Mama Suzanne Tabia founded the Amazing Grace Children's Home in the early 1990s at a camp for refugees from what was then called Southern Sudan in northern Uganda. It now hosts more than 200 children. Tabia says she started by adopting a child who was abandoned in the bush near the Oligi refugee settlement camp in Adjumani. Within 10 days, she says, people had left more than a dozen children at her doorstep, including babies. She says the orphanage was home to more than 100 children back in 2005 after the signing of the Comprehensive Peace Agreement, which ended Sudan's 21 years of civil war. Tabia left the children in Uganda and moved to Kajukeji, where she established a bigger facility and operated until the conflict escalated in Kajukeji earlier this year. Tabia says she was forced to abandon the orphanage in Kajukeji because soldiers with the armed opposition and the South Sudan Army were terrorizing residents.
What happened in one of our villages, when the government said that we didn't shoot people, set buildings on fire and so on. So this act frightened everybody.
Tabia says criminal behavior among rogue elements of the warring parties terrified Kajukeji town residents and many fled to Uganda. She says she evacuated more than 180 orphans amid heavy fighting.
Most of our people, they crossed to Uganda footing, but it was not possible for us because children are small. Then we have a lorry, but the lorry kept breaking down. And then carrying the small children from there to Adjumani by lorry was not easy because we have small babies.
Eventually, Tabia says she and her staff decided that all children older than 12 years old should walk, while arrangements were made to hire vehicles from Uganda to transport the smaller children. She says it took the staff a total of 6 days to get all the children safely across the border to Uganda. The management of the orphanage settled the younger children on a piece of land just outside Adjumani town. The older children, who were separated upon their arrival in Uganda, were sent off to a refugee camp in Morobi in Moyo district. Tabia says she worries about those children.
Since we came, no children have been registered because of lack of school fees. We don't have money for their schooling. And then, for those who are in Morobi, even no sleeping place, most of them under trees. up to now.
Having lost everything in Kajukeji, Mama Tabia and her team of volunteers try, amidst all the challenges, to help the children adjust to their new environment. Jansuk Alex is a nurse at the orphanage. He says it's a miracle none of the children died on the way to Uganda, considering the harsh conditions they faced along the journey. Alex says his top concern is figuring out how to minimize diseases among the children, but admits malaria continues to pose a serious health threat to the orphans.
Malaria is the commonest problem which is disturbing the children almost, and we treat them in the orphanage center here. Then the other issue is, the other problem is intestinal worms.
The orphanage relies almost entirely on donations from church organizations, particularly from the United States, but American donations have been intermittent in recent months. Wudu Moga manages the orphanage. He says he would like to construct new facilities for the children.
There is no support that comes to the children frequently. You know, you may get some support, and sometimes you find that there's no another support.
Maurice Taban, a 21-year-old boy who was dropped off at the orphanage following his mother's death, praised the volunteers for the care he received at the facility.
This place is really good, and this is really making children also to be hardworking. I didn't expect that I would grow up to this moment.
Like others at the orphanage, 16-year-old Catherine Joan does not attend school, but still hopes she will be able to pursue and achieve her dream one day.
I want to become a nurse because I like treating some people who are sick.
The Amazing Grace Children's Home was founded on Christian religious teachings and values, and Tabia says this was crucial in molding the character of the children.
On most of the children, I went behind, and then the first children that we started with, they have finished from university, and then four of the girls finished from university, and now they are married. And they have children.
Tabia says she will continue to try to build a new, larger home for the orphans who were forced to become refugees at such a young age. For VOA News, I am Simon Peter Apiku in Adjumani District, Northern Uganda.
The UN Refugee Agency reports that more than 11,000 Congolese have fled to neighboring Angola seeking refuge from an upsurge in violence between rebels and government forces in the Democratic Republic of Congo's Kasai province. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The UN Refugee Agency reports more than 1 million people have been displaced within the DRC since mid-August when conflict erupted in Kasai province. UNHCR spokesman Baba Balosh says more than 9,000 people have fled to Angola this month in fear of their lives as fighting has intensified. He says some refugees have been forced to hide in the forest for several days before making their escape. All the refugees, he says, arrive in Angola in desperate condition.
The situation among arriving refugee children is dire, as around half of the arriving refugee population are children. Many of them are arriving malnourished and sick, suffering from diarrhea, fever, and malaria. Two children are reported to have already died from severe malnutrition inside Angola.
Balosh says some parents reportedly have sent their children to Angola, fearing they would be recruited as child soldiers by the militias in Kasai. The UN Children's Fund agrees that is a valid concern. It reports at least 2,000 children are being used by the militia to fight their war. The UNHCR reports conditions along the DRC border in Angola are overcrowded. It says refugees lack proper shelter and are forced to stay in makeshift buildings. It says food, water, and other relief is in short supply. It says heavy rains are falling in the country, putting vulnerable refugees, women, children, the elderly, and disabled at risk of becoming ill. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Election season is in full swing in Kenya, and as the ruling Jubilee Party headed into primaries today, It got off to a rocky start in some places. Mohammed Yusuf has the latest from Nairobi.
The Jubilee planned to hold party primaries in all of Kenya's 47 counties Friday and Monday. But of the 21 scheduled for Friday, 3 had to be postponed. Confusion and accusations then derailed voting in 9 more counties like Uasin Gishu, home to Deputy President William Ruto. The Governor, Jackson Mandago, said party elections will not take place in Uasin Gishu.
Kwa hivyo, tumeketi na kama aspirants.
He says, we as aspirants and the people of this county have all agreed that all the polling stations have not received enough voting papers. Now we have decided the vote will not go on. Several hundred miles away in the already tense Rift Valley region, the Jubilee Party Secretary General Raphael Tuju warned leaders against such statements.
Any aspirant who has made that announcement, that is their own announcement. It is not the announcement of the party headquarters. And if they have called it off, they have called their own process off. Our process is continuing, and even if it is only 20 people who turn up, if we did not call it off, we will count those 20 votes and proceed.
Political competitors are complaining of a lack of enough voting materials, favoritism and rigging, including reports of pre-marked ballots. There is also disagreement over which voter register, that of the party or that of the National Electoral Commission, to use during the process. Jubilee Party officials offered a clarification Friday. They say they expect no more than 50% voter turnout during a primary, hence the provision of less ballot materials. The Jubilee Party is a young one. It was formed last year in a merger of 12 parties to consolidate support behind President Uhuru Kenyatta and his deputy. Opposition parties are facing logistical challenges of their own. The largest party, the Orange Democratic Movement, had to reschedule primaries in some constituencies due to late arrival or incomplete ballot materials. ODM also cancelled the results of the governorship primary in Busia County amid allegations of rigging. Stakes are high in the primaries in an opposition or a ruling party stronghold. Securing party's nomination for certain posts can be an almost certain ticket for victory. President Kenyatta on Thursday warned against violence.
A culture of hooliganism during the electoral process must not and will not be allowed to gain currency and acceptance.
All party primaries are expected to conclude next week. Kenya holds presidential, parliamentary, governorship and local elections in August. Mohammed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Labia Maro by Mede Muzika.
Labia Maro Nimikata Maro Mururu Olena Marie Vono Andrenandero Cecilia
Labia Maro Atane Morosi, Olena Maria, Samurunia,
Tison Ginedesi,
also Atia Mabesina Murunia,
Limingo,
Tanetina,
also Gawi,
Taketia
Purunia,
Purimba,
Azifu, Azifu,
Puni, Taketina Rube, Puni, Taketina Rube,
Tika Tatara, Lukude.
Daniel Paro Jadobe
We have been listening to Mede Muzika with the song Labia Maro. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We appreciate you spending your time with us. Have a peaceful weekend and join us again on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Jambo amati agu kotobi
abanda naru ngakidine ovu osane agu abana marayasi bizachuaru abane.